Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. And Stone, this is a very special episode, isn't it?
Good morning, sir. It most certainly is. And we have back in the studio with us here on the Business Radio X microphone, Miss Rhea Story. And today's segment is all about storytelling. This is going to be fantastic. Miss Rhea, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning.
Now, Rhea, how has storytelling impacted your life?
Well, I learned to tell my story about 4 years ago when I heard Les Brown speak. And Les Brown says, everyone has a story. You have a story. And someone needs to hear your story, and only you can help that person. And I thought, well, I've got a story, but I don't want to tell it. And I spent 6 months saying, no, I'm not going to talk about my story. I didn't want to share my story. And when I finally took that step and started sharing my story, I realized that my story can help someone. And that's truly where the value in our experiences comes from, is having learned the lessons and having come to the experiences, what can we then pass on to someone else? Now, I also realized that there were a lot of people like me who had a story to share or had a message to share, but like me, didn't know how to tell it. And I realized that when we learn to tell our story in the right way, it can help impact us and our message. It can impact our brand. It can impact why we do what we do.
Now, does your story have to be biographical?
I think that's a lot of the power in it, because it's not just who we are, it's why we are who we are. So any experience in life, we have the option or the choice, really, to take it. And as I say, we can let it define us for the rest of our life and hold us back, or we can choose to let it refine us. And that means that whatever we've gone through, you know, we've all experienced difficult times in life, you know, as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, or even just going through life. Life can be tough. But it's, what do we do with those experiences? Do we let them refine us and make us stronger, or do we let it hold us back?
So it sounds like a big part of this is your mindset going in into how and why you're going to share your story. But are there some mechanics that you've developed or you've been exposed to that do help you articulate your story more effectively and help you aim it toward the ends you're trying to accomplish?
Absolutely. You know, Simon Sinek talked a little bit in his book, Start With Why, that people don't buy what we do as much as they buy why we do it. You know, you think of Starbucks or you think of Apple or Harley Davidson. You know, the people who are following those brands believe what those companies believe. And it's being able to tap into our why as individuals that help us build our brand and share our message or tell our story. So what I do is I help people learn to tell their story and talk about how do we do that? You know, as we look through the experiences of our life, how do we break that down into something that's valuable? What's the lesson learned? How can we filter that down or funnel that down into your personal why and be able to articulate it?
Are there different types of stories?
Absolutely. I love to talk about three basic types of stories. So there's the who am I story, where we share, you know, experiences, life experiences, or business experiences. What are the things that contributed to who I am today? There are the why am I here stories, that talk about my personal why, my purpose, my passion, why I want to do what I believe in and what I do. And then the what I can do for you stories. And I think it's important to have all three. So being able to say, well, who am I? And then why am I here? But also, if you don't have that third type of story as to what I can do for you, that's very important when we talk about our clients or our customers. Because to have a story, everyone has a story, but how do we turn that into something that our customer or client can benefit from?
So this, what can I do for you, though? Don't you think some organizations maybe lead too quick with that and they don't have the foundation of the other two? Is that accurate?
Absolutely. And that's where we need to start with our why. Start with our purpose and our passion, the who am I, why am I here, and then translate into what does that look like in terms of benefit for the consumer.
But now, how does this work for the entrepreneur? Like, say there's a person out there and they're out there battling every day and they do like they can be anybody, right? Because this works not just for consultants or trainers. It can work for a mechanic or somebody who works at Waffle House, right?
Absolutely.
So like, so how do they kind of assess, okay, what is, how am I going to serve this planet? Like, what are my assets? Like, do you get kind of a pile of assets and then you kind of see how they, like, how do you build the story around all this stuff?
I can think of a couple of examples, and we'll talk about two in depth here in a few minutes. But one example on a big scale, I think, is Chick-fil-A. You know, Chick-fil-A has a very well-established brand, and they talk about, they're not in the chicken business, they're in the people business. And we a lot of times miss that. Their purpose as an organization, their why or their mission is not to sell chicken sandwiches. And yet they sell a great many chicken sandwiches. And I think that comes down to, we could, if you read Truett Cathy's story, you know, from the very beginning, he realized that the customer was an important priority for him. It wasn't important how many chicken sandwiches he could sell, but rather how could he come into that restaurant with a customer focus. And he realized that for him, an important way to do that was having a focus on his employees as well. So he spent a lot of time developing the employees and the organization and didn't worry about selling the chicken. The chicken sells itself.
Okay, I have a theory here that I want to put out to the table. I'd be interested in anybody, and all the microphones are open, in weighing in on this, because it's obvious. We all know, particularly those of us in the Atlanta market, the Cathy family has a well-established, it is no secret, they're a staunch Christian value system. And it is my theory that people who may not even completely share that value system still very much respect that they have a value system, that they live into and buy that value system. And so they are more than delighted to have a relationship with that organization and buy goods and services from that organization. It doesn't necessarily mean that your value system or your story has to line up directly with the people you're trying to serve. Anybody that's got a comment on that, I'd be interested in your take on that.
Sure. I think that's a good point. Whether or not we agree with Chick-fil-A's Christian perspective, we respect that they are willing to stand for their values, certainly at a significant cost. A significant portion of the restaurant business happens on Sunday. And they say, you know, we're so confident in who we are and why we believe in what we do. You know, we'll close on Sunday. You can go test the competitor's chicken sandwich and you can come back to us Monday through Saturday. And
I love
that.
I love that. Mm-hmm.
Now, Rhea, why don't you introduce the rest of the people here?
Yes, please. I'd love to. We've got Natalie Joy. And I'll let her speak to a little bit of her message and her brand, and then also Denard Ash, both of whom I met and have learned to just get to know them a little bit and the individual stories that they have. And what I love about both of them is that they're both passionate about what they do and why they do it. And they're both authors, or I think Natalie is just about to release her book. And so they've learned to tell their own story and then translate that into their message and their business. So Natalie, I'd love to just hear a little bit from you first.
Absolutely. I am just really honored for this opportunity to be here and to be able to share a little bit about my company and what we really do as far as an organization. And this is just a fantastic opportunity. So I'm just so excited to be here. So thanks, Rhea. So I'll tell you a little bit about my organization and what we're all about. And it's really kind of ties in a little bit to the question that was asked just a moment ago about, does it really matter if your message is a faith-based message or not a faith-based message, or how that really works? And we are not a faith-based company, but I'm definitely someone who is very open to talk about my faith or to post something about my God-sized dream. And I have clients that are women of faith and clients that are just drawn to the message that we have. And it hasn't really mattered the difference between the two. I think that we really have found as a company that it's drawn people in no matter what their specific preference might be. So, yeah.
And Denard also, I know he has one book published and he's just about to release his second book, actually. Denard, share a little bit about your why and your message.
Absolutely. And to piggyback off of Rhea and Natalie, it's about the chicken sandwich. People can disagree with your values, but if you produce a quality product that they can't resist, it's hard to not accept, you know, what is being offered. But As far as my own personal story, it's been, the story becomes clearer as I take the journey. And a lot of times leaders can be hesitant to start the journey because you don't know where you fit. You don't know who your target is. But for me, it's been revealing at it, my journey and my story is being revealed as I take the steps. So someone may be listening and saying, I don't know what my story is. But you know, it's something about you that you're aware of. It's a part of your story that you can tell. And as you take the step, more and more will be revealed. And getting to know Rhea and just being inspired by her and her story, it's encouraged me to continue to take steps forward to identify my story, clarify it, and then to begin to identify those people that I can connect with that will be most impacted by what I have to offer.
Now, do you find that a lot of people just think that their story isn't worth telling? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I think most of us walk around thinking, well, my story's been tough, and who wants to hear my story? And I don't know if that's true for everyone, but it's certainly true for most of the majority of people I meet and saying, where's the value in that? And I think it's, again, you know, coming back to why do we do what we do, whether it's a mechanic and their small business servicing cars, or a speaker on stage sharing their message, you know, again, people who believe what we believe share the same values. And not only are they much more likely to choose your services or your company or your organization, they're going to talk about you because they share those same values. Because who we are is part of our brand. It's part of our message. So I can think of an example of a local car mechanic in our home city, and they have just incredible service, and they're always busy. They do things a little bit differently, certainly probably at more expense for them, but they've learned to translate their why into what they do. And they're not speaking for a living necessarily, but what they are is they've built their values as an organization, and they're very clear about their values, their why, and their purpose.
So, Denard, you've written, published one book, you got another one coming out. Do you find that when you invest the time and energy to sit down and commit your thinking to paper, that it helps crystallize your thinking and makes your next talk or your next conversation about the topic that much clearer? That has it helped in that regard at all?
Absolutely. Not only being therapeutic, but definitely the story becomes clearer as you write it out. And a lot of times I start with a basic premise of something that I want to discuss in the book. And by the time it's done, it's something completely different. Not completely different, but it's a lot deeper and a lot more. It takes unexpected turns along that journey. So definitely the going through the process of writing the books and getting it down on paper, you definitely gain additional clarity through that process that you may not have before you start.
So what advice, if any, do you have for Natalie? She's trying to get this thing out.
Huh? Well, Natalie already has a great story, so I don't think she's going to have any problems. It's just a matter of being committed to doing it, making the decision to tell it, to making the decision to push past the barriers. Because when you're telling your story, there's always going to be some resistance telling you to hold back. Don't tell that part because that's a little bit too painful. That's a little bit too embarrassing. That's a little bit too revealing. So I think it's just continuing to remain committed to telling your story, no matter how uncomfortable it may feel, because it's those uncomfortable parts and those parts that you may try to hide and not really want to reveal that will probably end up having the greatest impact on someone else.
Now, I'll put this out to everybody. Do you think that you have to be transparent in order to be authentic?
Natalie, what do you think?
I think it's important to one of the things I say is that you're given a story and it's not up to you to cut out the chapters that you don't particularly like. And you're meant to tell your whole story. And I'll tell you, for me, there's definitely parts of my story that for years just kind of lived with a little bit of shame and didn't want very many people to know my story. In 2014, there were 5 people in my life that knew my story, 5 people. And as of today, there are thousands of people that read my story through my website or hear my story through speaking or my coaching clients, and they hear it through just interaction with me. And it's just one of those things that to start off and have 5 people in your life, and that's all you want to know. But know that you were given a story and it's meant to be shared. And the moment that I started to really embrace that and start to share my story with others, others wanted to hear my story and they started to connect my story with my mission and my why and what I was doing. And for the first time, people started to really tie that into understanding a little bit more about what my company is all about and what we're all about and what I'm all about. And it really started to make a lot more sense and people were grabbing a hold of it, which is great.
Now, can you talk to the point when you said there were five people that knew your story, right?
Yes.
So at some point there was six.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yes. It's actually kind of a fun story. It went from five to 200 in a matter of one morning.
Okay. So so you had a chance to share this with a bunch of people at one time.
I did.
But I want to know the thoughts prior to uttering those words in front of that group. Like, what was going through your head as you were approaching that stage or wherever it was when you were telling that?
Absolutely. So it was actually the night previous. I was at a retreat that I was going to be speaking at the next day, a group of women. And during that evening, I had so many different people that kept approaching me with the same question. Is Natalie Joy your real name? Is Natalie Joy your real name? And I, you know, always would give a little response just to say, yeah, it's my name. And that would be about it. And I, that evening, was preparing for my talk the next day and really reviewing my notes and just feeling so strongly that I was meant to share that story. When did Natalie Joy become my name and what's the background behind that? And there was a whole lot of tears that evening as I rewrote the whole intro to my talk to share that. And I'll tell you, it was the most powerful speaking engagement I've ever done. When it came to the first time really opening up, people started to connect. Okay, I get it. That makes so much more sense. And I you're so much more authentic to understand who you are, your story, and how that connects into your brand and your mission and what it's all about. And so it was just, I definitely have zero regrets of that moment. But leading up to it, yes, lots of tears and lots of just battling with, are you sure I'm supposed to share this? But it's really the right decision.
So those were, that was your internal dialogue?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So what was the debate in your head?
I think it was a lot of the fact that here I am opening up to people. Will I receive judgment or will there be, how will people receive my story? And how will that go? I mean, just to spend so much of your life really cutting out, my story involves 8 years of my life, and to cut out 8 years of your life, it's a hard thing to do. But to really open that up, I think a big part of it was, how will others perceive me? And will they, it changed their perspective of me as I, you know, share my story with them.
What was your worst case scenario? Like this fear that you built up in your head, well, you thought everybody would walk out the room? And
No. I think it was probably, I just didn't know if as I started to walk through sharing my story, you know, how they would react to it. Worst case scenario, I don't know. I guess maybe they just wouldn't look at me the same way or perceive me the same way. I guess that would have been worst case scenario.
But that was also the best case scenario.
It
right?
actually was. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm so glad that I did share it.
All right. We've reached the portion of the program where we talk about me for a little bit.
Okay.
Well, here's what I'm observing. I know a little bit about Rhea's story, or one of the stories that you share, and it's inspiring and it represents a struggle. It's heartbreaking. It's encouraging from the standpoint of someone like me thinking, wow, I've never had to experience anything like that. I can't imagine. And if she can do it, I can do it. Your background as well, Natalie, I know it represents a struggle. As I understand it, Matt came up poor and probably didn't have maybe some of the same support system that I had. Our producer, Ryan Redhawk McPherson, was blown up in a Stryker vehicle while he was defending our country. I want to share my story too. Guys, I had a storybook childhood. I had wonderful parents. I didn't want for a thing. My dad was a basketball coach when I was a young kid. It was, you can't imagine a more fun childhood for an 8, 10-year-old boy than a dad is a high school basketball coach. I got a good education. I have a beautiful wife. But isn't there some way that I can also share my story and serve? So I just want to bring that to light, because it's almost like I feel like I should go back to mom and dad and say, you really did me a disservice, you know? I can't be a good speaker or author because I had this great life. So if you'd speak to that, son.
Sure. No, you know what? The first thing that comes to my mind when I hear you talk about that and how everything was good is how many people need to hear that, because how many people are out there need to know that as parents, they could give that experience to their children. Because a lot of us walk around with the illusion, I think, that good or happy doesn't exist. You know, we almost have a jaded or a biased thought that life is hard, because my life was hard. And so everybody's life is hard. And so how many of us, you know, we see a cycle in families that, you know, a child was brought up through difficult circumstances, and they turn around and pass some of those same circumstances by the choices that they make onto their children. And so I think of all the people who need to know and hear your story, who need to know that good can exist and life can be good. I would be curious to know, what made it good? You know, what are the decisions that your parents made and then you made to have that good experience, to have that good life where things are good, they work out and life is good? Because those are lessons that we need, that we all can learn from and say, wow, can I make some of those good choices?
Now, a lot of the people in the room here are solopreneurs or have boutique practices. Does this kind of strategy work for larger organizations as well?
I think it does, but I think it's important to start with the leader of the organization or the founder. You know, you've all been to a restaurant where you open the menu and the first thing you see is the story of how that restaurant got started. And we like to read that because that's the history. That's the why the person believes in their organization. Now, it probably started as a one or two person sandwich shop, but now it's a chain restaurant. So I think when we're talking about large organizations, again, we need to bring it down to the individual level. And how does that story or how does that experience affect your target or your niche as a business owner or business organization? And then how can we tie that into what we do? So if it's an experience of starting a roadside lemonade stand, how do we tie that into the service that we now give customers? It's different for everyone because I think everyone has a unique story. So, and that's one of the things I'm passionate about is helping people figure, you know, filter that out and figure out how do we funnel that down into tying those messages together so that they're important, but also accessible and that they can be told.
So, Denard, we've all established here that everyone has a story, and I'm getting the distinct sense that there's a way for all of us to utilize our story to serve others. You're fond of saying everyone has a gift.
Mm-hmm.
Can you speak to that a little bit?
Absolutely. My own story, I've always viewed myself as somewhat of an underdog. Underdog is someone maybe not expected to achieve certain results. That's how I viewed myself. I was the youngest of 8 children. I wasn't necessarily I was on the shorter end growing up. my twin brother DeAndre was a great football player and I wasn't. And so I really wasn't sure of my place and what I had to offer. And my parents had great parents, but we didn't have a lot of money again. So I always viewed myself as somewhat of an underdog and not knowing what I had to offer that would allow me to overcome challenges and make a great impact. And then being the youngest of 8 kids kind of forced me. I chose to look at things from the outside, from an outside perspective. And it really shaped how I viewed the world and how I believe we can overcome challenges. So as far as gifts are concerned, I believe that no matter where you are and how significant you may feel, that everyone was given a gift. No one was placed here on this earth unequipped. We all come to places in our lives where we feel powerless, where we feel like the challenge is insurmountable. How do I take my company from here to here? How do I take my life from here to here? How do I come out of this, overcome this $100,000 of debt that I feel like I'll never pay for? And being up against these insurmountable challenges time and time in my life, it's forced me to rethink how I see things and understanding that I have been given a gift. And when you take hold of your gift, understand that you've been given one, work to identify and develop it. It's nothing that you can accomplish. And if I could use one really great example, it's the elephant in everybody's room right now when I talk about the importance and the power of having a gift. And I want to encourage everybody to look at this free of politics, from a political standpoint. This last year, it's something happened that is important, I believe, for every leader and every person to recognize apart from politics. We have a president-elect that has defeated an entire political establishment, left and right, campaigns, established campaigns, analytics, politicians who have been in the political world for decades, and they were defeated. How did that happen? Of course, we can say there were undercurrents and feelings and discontentment with certain parts of the populace, but how did that happen? How did that upset happen? Because one candidate understood his gift and had developed it to a point where he could use it to do the impossible. What was that gift? The simple gift of being able to sell an idea. Donald Trump was blessed with the ability to sell an idea. It's the same gift that he used when he convinced investors to make his first investment in Manhattan. He was able to sell an idea and get others to buy in. And he used the same gift to sell the story of his vision for America. Now, apart from politics, I think this is a very important lesson for all of us. All of us have been given a gift that allow us to defeat the odds and overcome insurmountable challenges and do things that people think are impossible when we identify and understand what our specific gifts are. Our specific gifts were given to us to overcome whatever challenge we may be facing.
Now, don't you think a lot of this is also how you position it in your mind? Like, you can look at being an underdog as a negative, like I'm last one picked, I'm, you know, nobody wants me. Mm-hmm. But you can also look at that as a positive in that they're not going to see me coming and I'm going to be able to surprise them.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. Again, look at the elephant in the room. Look at what just happened. They didn't see him coming.
He was out there for everyone to see.
But yeah, but they didn't expect it. They don't see you coming because they don't expect you to win. That's an advantage. They don't see you coming. The expectations are low, so when you perform at a certain level, it makes a greater impact because the expectations are lower. Mm-hmm. Another advantage is you begin to see things from the outside. That means that you can sit back and say, okay, I see the whole thing. Where do I fit? Where is the weakness here? What narrative can I add to the current story that adds additional value? So it definitely is important to change the perspective and how you tell the story to yourself.
Right. Now, that's Rhea. You talk about this, right, where it's how you see yourself changes everything.
Absolutely. Because, I call it reframing our story, you know.
Well, you also said define or refine. Those are important words in this context.
Sure. You know, when we let something define us, when we let being the underdog define us, when we let having a good experience through childhood define us, we tell ourselves a story about that. So I am the underdog, so I shouldn't try or I shouldn't strive. Or nobody wants to hear my story because it's not valuable because it was good. So we can let that define us. But every day we write a new chapter, a new page in that story. And we make the decision, do we let those experiences, good or bad, positive, negative, regardless of what they are, we can reflect on them and we can say, I'm going to let it define me and hold me back and make me either choose a different path or not make a decision at all, which is choosing. Or will I say, you know, here's the lesson learned. How can I share that? How can I weave that into my product or my message, my brand? Because it is part of who I am. And when I'm willing to share, you know, maybe it's an emotional scar, maybe it's a physical scar, but when I'm able to share that and say, I'm stronger because of that experience, we choose to be better because of it. And I say, you know, we can be bitter about what happens to us in life, or we can be better because of it. And the decision, again, is ours. We write that that new page in our story every day, even today, by the choices that we make. For a lot of us, it's thinking that we're not good and we're not perfect. We're not, but nobody else is either. And, you know, you touched on transparency. I think that's where it's important to be authentic. Think of it from a customer service standpoint. You know, you're in a restaurant and you order a steak and your steak doesn't come with the rest of your table's party, or maybe it comes out well done and you ordered it rare. You know, your waiter or waitress comes up, and if they say, "Oh my goodness, I'm so sorry, it was my mistake," or "It was our mistake, we'll get it corrected." How does that change your experience versus they come out and say, "Well, gosh, I'm sorry, too bad, eat it cold." You know, when they're able to be transparent and own a mistake or own a lesson, it changes our perspective of them. And so, like Natalie touched on, you know, sometimes we have this fear that when people know our stories, they see us differently. Absolutely. But how we frame that and showing the positives of what we've been through, good or bad, allows us to say, if I framed it, I can reframe it. And, you know, Natalie's, that's a big part of what she speaks to. I know she does a lot of coaching with business owners as well, and helping people see, you know, kind of the same thing. Your mess is your message.
And then your last chapter doesn't have to be your final chapter.
You know, in terms of legacy, I think that's where it comes back to. You know, regardless of what we do, you know, whether we're waiting tables or whether we're working on people in a hospital, you know, it's the legacy that we leave is decided by our everyday interactions and what we do with what we've been given. You know, we've all been given, as Denard said, gifts or talents, abilities. We've all been given a story to share. What we do with that is what's significant, and that determines our final chapter. And in many cases, we see that go on for years and years. You think of the influence of someone like Mother Teresa, for example, who wasn't a powerful leader in by the world's definition, or certainly not a big corporation CEO. But think of the influence and the impact and the legacy that she had as she wrote those final chapters and what she did with what she had.
Now, can we talk a little bit maybe in the weeds tactically, how a person kind of gets this out of their head, gets their story from just kind of these random thoughts or this history that they had, and then they're able to kind of turn it into either a book or a speech, or it's a coaching session. Is there some kind of tactics that a person can do to get it out of their head and kind of organize it?
Absolutely. I call it a funnel of five, just because I'm a visual person, and I think a lot of us like visual things. So one of the things I walk my clients through is, you know, start at the top, get a blank piece of paper and just brainstorm your experiences, your talents, your gifts, your abilities, you know, whatever you have that makes you you. And as you filter that down, go deeper, you know, put all of that on paper and list it out, and then filter that through or funnel that down into saying, well, what makes me different? What makes me unique? You know, there may be many people that have a similar story in one respect to you, but you are only you because of all of the things that happened. So start at the 30,000 foot level, filter that down or funnel that down into, okay, here's where I start, but now what makes me unique? Maybe it was a different combination of experiences, or maybe it's more than one experience. Maybe it's the thinking or the learning that I've done based on that experience. What gifts do I have that help contribute to that talent or that ability? So, you know, start at the top, funnel that down to what makes you unique, and then translate that down into what I can do or give someone, a client or a customer, that's different or unique because of what I've been through or because of my circumstances, my learning. So again, it's a process and it's a journey. As Denard said, you know, it certainly takes some thought and some introspect and reflection. And I think none of us get there overnight. I know for me, it was a matter of a couple of years probably before I really realized, you know, it's a process to walk through. And so I take a step and then I take another step and then I take another step.
Now, Natalie, can you share how, I believe your niche is women entrepreneurs, is a group that resonates with your message. How do you create this message and the story and then know who is the group that it's going to resonate with? How do you identify that niche in order to know who to serve most efficiently?
Absolutely. So my why is really helping women find more joy in their personal and professional lives.
And was it always women, or was it entrepreneurs at first? And then you're like, wow, women sure resonate with this message. Maybe I'll focus on them.
Yeah. Well, actually, it started out originally. My background is actually in the corporate world, doing executive coaching, medical, dental offices, small to medium sized businesses. And that's really what I did for 13 years really working with that type of group, but felt like I was being drawn into working specifically with women. I was doing the right work, but for the wrong audience. Mm-hmm. And when I talk about my God-sized dream, that was really kind of that shift. And I started to really just honestly pray that doors would open in the direction of what did that look like for me. And what just kept opening one after another were specifically working with women. And I fell in love with that whole concept of helping women specifically kind of through this process. I knew my why was tied to my story. And like I said, it has to do with helping women find more joy in their personal and their professional lives. And at first, I wasn't sure what that looked like. And I started out with, well, I'm going to speak on the topic of my story, but I knew I wanted to do more with coaching and kind of dive back into that world. And so I started to kind of tip into, well, maybe it's life coaching and back into business coaching, and realized that my niche, the thing that I love more than anything, is to help a woman go through the process of really making their dream come alive when it comes to starting a business. So it's launching the business and then helping them to grow the business. And currently right now, I've got 40 women that I come alongside that I help through the process of growing their business and really some of them launching their business. And the great thing is that for me, throughout this process, they are finding more joy in their personal and their professional lives. And to kind of answer your question, originally, I wasn't sure what that looked like. But as I started to kind of narrow that pool, it really turned out to be this incredible group of women and more women that are right in line with that mission of pursuing that specific dream have just continued to come to the table. But for me, it's really important that one of the things I had a lot of frustration with in the corporate world was that I just wanted to make a bigger impact. I realized all I was doing was making a whole lot of doctors and dentists richer. And I wanted to do something more. And so one of the qualifications in order to do coaching with me is that you've got to have a business or a business concept that in some way, shape, or form is giving back. So in some way, making an impact in the world. And it's pretty phenomenal to kind of step back and look at the things that these women are doing. And just to have a tiny piece of that is just been absolutely phenomenal. But it all ties right back into my why. They're finding more joy in their personal and professional lives, which ties right back into my story of really kind of going through a very hard time in my life where I had been in a relationship for 8 years that was very emotionally and psychologically abusive. I left that relationship after a lot of things happened that were just very bad situations. Met with a therapist that said, there are people I meet with, and there was a few red flags, and this room is full of red flags. It is time to go, girl. And there was a point in my life where I remember looking down at the paperwork where I needed to pick a name. And I was born Natalie Joy, and I had a different last name at the time. And Joy was my middle name. And I said, you know what? I'm going to pick Joy as my last name. And it is going to set the tone for my life moving forward, that every day I'm going to wake up and I'm going to choose joy in my life from a personal standpoint, from a professional standpoint. And now to own a company, it's called Defining Your Joy. And every day I help women define their joy and move through the process of finding more joy in their personal professional lives. It just happens to be that it is a company that helps them launch a business and really get off the ground as an entrepreneur.
So for you, an early step in all this was at least partially guided with the aid of an expert, a therapist, to kind of help you think through things. What are some things that the rest of us might do, and maybe we need or maybe we don't need an actual therapist, but is there some assessment, some reading, some exercises, or something that our listeners can start to do right now that kind of put them more on this same type of path?
Absolutely. And for me, it was really from a personal standpoint, I needed to figure out my personal life situation. And that kind of led me into moving out of the situation that I was in and into the life that I have now. But I will tell you, there is a specific assessment that I am certified to teach in, that I teach. And I really require all of my clients to take this specific assessment. It's called Colby, and it is all about your natural strengths. One of the reasons I love it is because it has to do with how you naturally problem solve, how you naturally go about really figuring out your specific strengths and aligning them with where you are going to be the most effective in the workplace.
And Denard's over here nodding his head because this is, you're singing this song, right? Like, go with your gift, go with your
absolutely
strength. Yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely. You know, one of the exercises I just absolutely love is this exercise I do with my clients, and I'll have them take a pen and they write their name on a piece of paper, and then I'll say, okay, now switch hands and write your name again. And it's this frustration. And I'll say, okay, from now on, every time we work together on a coaching call and you're taking notes, you need to do it with your non-dominant hand. And they'll say, And this is like the beginning of this analogy of your dominant is your strength. You can write with the other hand, but it's slower. It's less effective. It's more frustrating. It doesn't take very long before you're ready to throw that pen and say, I'm done. I'm just done. And so part of working through this specific assessment that I love to use as a tool really helps align, okay, this is your natural strength. This is what you're naturally good at. These are your natural gifts. And then we really help them work that within their business to figure out what's the best fit for them. And honestly, not everyone, no one has strengths in all areas. So it also helps you identify where you have strengths and then help you align other individuals within your organization that have strengths in opposite areas than you do.
Now, is that a philosophy that everybody agrees with, that follow your strengths and not really, I mean, you still want to kind of pay attention to your weakness, at least be aware of it. It's not, you don't want to spend all your time just fixing your weaknesses. You want to kind of go with your strengths. Is that to be the consensus?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think that you can spend a whole lot of time. You could practice and practice and practice to write with that non-dominant hand, right? And spend all your time and energy there. But really, if you figure out where your strengths are and you align with those, that's where you're going to be the most effective. I think it's great to be aware of what your weaknesses are, but if you spend all your time and energy in those areas, it's not going to be the most effective situation for you.
I agree. One thing that I like to relate that to, that concept to, is, you know, stars have strengths. They have points. And so we want to be stars. We don't want to be the well-rounded circle necessarily. When you're talking about a limited, I mean, let's face it, our time is limited, our energy is limited, our focus is limited. Let's be a star. Let's shine in those areas where we are gifted rather than being the well-rounded circle. And I know Denard talks about a few different ways and how to identify those gifts as well. Denard, share with us a few of those.
Sure. This is my unscientific approach, but something that has worked for me and I've observed in the life of others. The first thing that I know, Stone, you love assessment. So assessments are a good starting point because they can help you identify your strengths. But we want to go from your strengths to your gift. There's a difference. Your strengths is something that you are good at. Your gift is something that you are exceptional at. Your gift is something that you have the ability to change the world when you do it. Rhea mentioned Mother Teresa. She could serve like no one else. That was her gift. With her gift of service in her heart, she transformed the world. This week is Monday was King Week. King was an exceptional leader. His strength was his voice. He was an extremely gifted communicator. And with that gift, he transformed the world. So you want to go from your strengths to your gift, that thing that you've been given to transform the world. In my new book, Leadership Lessons of David, we talk about how David was a gifted warrior. He only had a rock, but he defeated an experienced warrior with a sword, a spear, and an armor bearer. This guy had everything that he needed to succeed.
He thought he did.
So a rock in the hand of a gifted person is more powerful than an army with all the traditional tools for success. So you want to go from strengths to your gift. This is how you do it. You want to do assessments because that gives you insight. Secondly, talk to those people around you. Ask them how you have impacted their lives in the greatest way. A lot of times we think our gifts are one thing, but it may not be, because when you're 7 years old, you sung on a song or you were on Star Search and your mom said, you can sing, baby. You can sing. So you think that's your gift. It may be a strength, maybe something that you can do, but it may not be your gift.
So don't go to American Idol based on that.
That's right. Talk to your real friends.
You need more data points.
Yes. And ask them, okay, in what ways have I impacted your life the most? Talk to coworkers, talk to those who you volunteered with and ask them, what ways have I impacted your life in the greatest? Secondly, say yes to new opportunities. When opportunities present themselves to do something that may be uncomfortable, like coming on a radio show, whatever it may be, instead of that natural inclination of saying no, say yes, because that saying yes will give you additional insight. If you do really well, then chances are you may be leaning towards your gift. If you bomb, then
that's
it may not be. That's additional insight. Next is serving others that understand what their gifts are. If you connect with others who are on mission, understand what their gifts are and are changing the world, by serving without expecting a paycheck or necessarily something in return, but serving for the simple reason of wanting to see their vision come to pass, something amazing happens. Doors open for you. You gain additional insight and you begin to see how you fit into that puzzle. Mm-hmm. And finally, reflection. Reflecting on your story. Look back at the times. What have you enjoyed most in your life? When have you been most alive? When have you made the greatest impact? Taking time to reflect over all those things is not going to magically, you're going to have to do work to identify it. But those are five things that can help you begin to identify what your specific gift is.
You know, and I think touching on what Denard is saying, the reason all of this is important to begin with is that because if we're going to be excellent or change the world in what we do, whether it's just our small corner or whether it's, you know, 10,000 people, in order to work toward that, we need passion. And so what we do should be in alignment with our personal purpose and our personal mission. Because if it is, and when it is, that's when we'll work, you know, that a lot of entrepreneurs put in far more than an 8-hour standard workday. Why? Because they believe in what they're doing and they value what they're doing. Because when we're able to tap into that potential and that mission, that our why or our gifts, that's when we translate that into passion and energy. And we'll put far more effort and excitement into what we do. I think of the best administrative assistants in the world that I've been just, you know, been able to meet. And they're excited about what they do. They know that they're in the perfect place because their mission is to serve someone else and help that person be successful. It's not about being the greatest person or the biggest position or having the CEO title. It's being able to tap into your personal vision and your why and be the best that you can be at that. And when you do that, that's when every day is just as good as every other day. There are no 5-day work weeks. There's 7-day weekends where you spend every day excited to get up and say, hey, this is why I do what I do. You know, you live for those little tiny moments where you say, I made a difference in that person's life. Even it's just a smile at you know, when they came through the counter checkout line. How many people can you touch, and even in little ways?
And it's important to not kind of bury your gift or your story, right? There's an obligation to do this. Isn't that true?
To me, it is. I think of when we're able to tell our stories, you know, good and bad. Number one, it can inspire someone. It can touch someone. We may never know it. You know, one of my favorite quotes that Max says is, when we touch a life, we don't always feel it. And sometimes it's sharing our story in even little pieces or little ways that we take for granted, you know, that it could make a huge difference in our lives. You think of some of the most inspiring athletes, Olympic athletes, who, you know, just because they saw someone else on TV at a young age and said, I want to do that. And they became inspired. Now, whoever they saw, you know, 20 years ago may never know that they were the spark or the catalyst. Mm-hmm. So I think we're given experiences or talents, gifts. It's our stewardship to take that and make the best use of it. And I think we have a responsibility to do that wisely and to honor that charge.
Now, why don't we go around the room and each share maybe a piece of advice you would give somebody who's thinking about, you know, taking that plunge and telling their story or using their gift for the first time. You want to start?
Sure. You know what I'd love? I love this quote by Zig Ziglar. It says, you don't have to be great to start, but you have to start to be great. And so my best piece of advice to someone would be just get started. You know, whether for you that's blogging or creating a website and writing articles to share your message, or whether that's for you is sitting down and saying, what is my why? You know, a lot of times we don't think about why do I do what I do every day? So just get started. Like Denard said, it takes some reflection, but take that first step. And again, it's a process. So, you know, take the first step and then tomorrow take another step and tomorrow take another step. Keep going.
Natalie?
I would say one of the things that I noticed that's really, really common, especially with women that I work with, is that they struggle with comparison. And I think sometimes when it comes to telling your story, so often I'll hear, you know, I have a story, but, you know, there's so many other books out there that have this theme, or so many other people have a story and they seem to already be telling it and telling it better than I could ever tell. And I always go back to, I heard a while back ago this analogy of the fact that, you know, you have, maybe your husband tells you something over and over and over again, but it's not until maybe one of your girlfriends says to you the exact same thing. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, I get it, right? And then you go back and your husband's like, oh my goodness, I've been telling you that 20 times now. But the whole point is the fact that sometimes it's just another voice. There's something that you are saying when you're sharing your story that they could have read 20 other books that have a similar theme to what your story is, but yet there's something in your story, in your words, some little piece that they get it, they connect with it, and that's what really matters. So don't just shut down because of the fact that there's other people that are telling a similar story to yours. Your story matters. Your specific individual story matters.
Denard?
Well, those were both great answers.
Did they take yours?
Yeah, tough act to follow.
I was thinking, like, what do I say now? Like, I'll pick it back on what both Rhea and Natalie said. I guess one thing I would add for me is just your story doesn't have to be perfect. You don't have to tell it in perfect sequential order. You can have hiccups. You can have commas in the wrong place. Like, don't worry. Don't try to get your story perfect before you present it. I'm telling myself this as I say it because as I'm writing a book and finished my second one, like, I'm a month late because I always wanted, it's something else that I could have added, could have said in a different way to make it greater and make it more perfect. And so the idea that it has to be perfect, get over that. Get it out there, get it done. There's always a revision. There's always version two.
Second edition. Version, right?
There you go. So that's my little bit to add.
All right. Before we wrap, I'd like to go around as well and make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you guys, know where to find these books and these other resources. And if they want to have a substantive conversation with you or someone on your team. So we'll start with you, Denard. What's the best way for folks to connect with you, email, LinkedIn, whatever, if you'd share some of those coordinates?
Absolutely. LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and email, all at Denard Ash. Email denardash@gmail.com. And my book you can find at my website at ashtrainingco.com. But reach out to me on any of those platforms at Denard Ash, and I'd love to connect with you.
All right, Miss Natalie?
Absolutely. It's definingyourjoy.com is where you're going to find us. Otherwise, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, any of those, it's going to be at definingyourjoy. And info@definingyourjoy.com is going to be the best email address. And we're very, very excited. We've got a awesome new entrepreneurship boot camp that launches this week. So pretty excited about that new product that's coming out this week.
Fantastic.
Sure. So my website is topstoryleadership.com/storyteller. So you can go to that page. I've got a couple of blogs and links on there that can help that person who's thinking, well, let me just get started. Let me just dip a toe in the water. Maybe I'm not ready to jump off the cliff yet, but, you know, drag the toe in the water and feel how the water feels. There's a blog with some good information on getting started, helping build your brand or sharing your message as well. So please check out those resources. Otherwise, connect with me on Facebook, LinkedIn, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram. I'm about as social as you can get and still have a life. A Rhea story.
Well, thank you, Rhea, for putting this together. Storytelling is an important component for every business person to educate themselves and learn more. And this was a great forum to share the wisdom of the room. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. And thank you for Natalie and Denard for being here this morning to share their stories.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Rhea.
It was a huge pleasure. Thank you.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton, Ryan Redhawk, McPherson, and all of the Business Radio X family saying we will see you next time on Atlanta Business Radio.